What's better in life than a bottle of wine, great food, and an amazing conversation?
My name is Kate Sullivan, and I am the host of To Dine For.
I'm a journalist, a foodie, a traveler with an appetite for the stories of people who are hungry for more. Dreamers, visionaries, artists, those who hustle hard in the direction they love. I travel with them to their favorite restaurant to hear how they did it. This show is a toast to them and their American dream. To Dine For, the podcast, is brought to you by American National, offering a broad suite of insurance solutions to protect what matters most to you. For 115 years, American National has remained committed to helping people and communities make a real difference in their lives. American National supports great local community organizations led by the kind of people you hear about on To Dine For. People who are inspired to make a difference and inspire others in return. American National's philosophy is helping where it's needed helps us all. For a description of the American National companies, the products they write, and the states in which they're licensed, visit americannational.com/dine. Welcome to Dine For, the podcast, where we meet the world's most creative and innovative minds at their favorite restaurant. On today's episode is Larry Liu.
We see food as a, we call it a mirror and a window. So it's a mirror to reflect who you are, your culture, your upbringing. And it's a window for you to see through it to understand another culture.
Larry Liu is the CEO and founder of We, the leading online grocer for Asian and Hispanic foods. He emigrated to the U.S. as an engineer. Larry quickly noticed the limited availability of Asian products and absence of a social shopping experience. In response, he launched We in 2015, transforming it into a $2.8 billion enterprise that marries cultural authenticity with culinary joy. Today, We has a nationwide reach, celebrating and enriching communities through authentic food options all over the country. Please enjoy my conversation with Larry Liu. Hi, Larry. How's it going?
Good, good. How are you?
Great. I am thrilled to be with you this morning. Thank you for taking the time to be on To Dine For, the podcast. I cannot wait to hear about We, but I'm going to begin this podcast the way I begin all my conversations by asking your favorite restaurant. Where do you live currently? And you don't have to take me to the city where you live currently, but where is your favorite restaurant?
Yeah, I live in the Bay Area, Palo Alto. My favorite restaurant is a Taiwanese hot pot place. It's called Wuji Mala Hot Pot.
Wuji Mala.
Yes, yes.
Okay.
I've been going to that restaurant for more than 10 years now.
And what do you love about it?
Oh, I like the flavor. I grew up in central China, so I'm always very into spicy food. So I like the taste and also the simplicity, because you can just order a pot. You don't have to choose the ingredients. They already pick the ingredients that go into that pot. So it's very easy. Each person has their own pot. I just love it.
I love that. I love that. Thank you for sharing that. You know, I just did a deep dive into your LinkedIn profile to get a little bit of an understanding of your career trajectory. You came to this country from China as an engineer. Is that correct?
Yeah, yeah.
And what, when you were coming over and you were gonna, you know, obviously you already have an advanced degree, what did you want to do? Who did you want to be? What kind of job did you want to get?
So my first job after college was working for Intel as an engineer to write test programs for semiconductor chips.
Okay.
So when Intel sent me to the US, that was my job here in the US. So I didn't expect to become an entrepreneur at that point. So I just thought, oh, it's a great opportunity to come to the US.
Okay. So you never thought, did you have entrepreneurs in your family? Like, what led you to think you would do something entrepreneurial? Because typically it takes an enormous amount of risk and you have to have an appetite for risk. Did you feel like you had an appetite for risk?
Yeah, my dad is an entrepreneur. So you can say it's kind of in the family.
Okay.
I didn't expect to do any entrepreneurial things because I didn't know what to do. But after I came to the US, I discovered a hobby, which is to sell things on eBay.
Ah, so that became... you and my mom. You and my mom have something in common. All right.
Yeah, so because, you know, when I came to the US, I was living in Folsom, California. So it's a very quiet town outside on the suburb of Sacramento. So it was kind of after work, not much to do. So I discovered this hobby where I saw, you know, great deals in local stores or online. So I would buy things and resell them on eBay.
Okay, so that got you going. When did you have the idea for We, which is an online grocery store for foods that are hard to get, whether you are Asian, whether you're Hispanic, and I'm sure at this point you've expanded to so many other ethnicities. But when did that idea strike, and can you talk me through that?
Yeah, ever since I came here, I couldn't find the food that I love, right? So in Folsom, the closest Chinese supermarket is about 2 hours away in Berkeley. So I always had that problem, but I didn't think there was any solution until fast forward to 2014. That's already like 11 years after I came to the US. There was a messaging app called WeChat that seemingly overnight became super popular among all Chinese people living, you know, anywhere in the world. So here in the US, the same thing happened. And WeChat has this feature that you can be added to group chats without your consent in the very beginning, right? So I was added to a lot of groups by my friends, and I saw something really interesting in some of those groups. For example, I saw like people were sharing information about where to buy hard to find food, and some more resourceful members even organize what we call group buys. So they would ask the vendors to deliver to the local communities in bulk some of the things they really love.
Yeah, give me an example. What ingredients were missing? Like, you wanted to cook, what did you need to create your favorite dish that you couldn't find?
Yeah, a lot of ingredients are missing. For example, very freshly caught fish, right? If you walk into a mainstream supermarket, you get the fish that is, you know, filleted and probably not as fresh as you would find in China. So one of the examples, this mom from our local communities, she visited Half Moon Bay. Half Moon Bay is a local harbor here in the Bay Area. They has this fisher's market, and she bought some really fresh fish, freshly caught Pacific Blackhawk. So she actually came back and posted the information in our group and said, hey, if you guys want to buy the fish together, maybe I can contact the fisherman to go out and catch the fish and deliver to our local community.
Wow.
So to my surprise, overnight, she got an order of more than $10,000. So many people just text back in the group, say, hey, I want two. And then a week later, she already passed the information to the fisherman. So the fisherman called the fish and clean up those fish and put in those huge coolers with ice and deliver to our local community. So there was a huge line in front of that mom's garage on that day, and everyone just waited their turn to get the fish and pay cash to the fishermen. And after that, they went back to their homes, and the whole WeChat group exploded again because everyone really loved the fish. They posted like pictures, recipes. They were like, oh, this is the best fish I've ever had in the US. So guess what? The people who didn't buy the fish wanted to buy the fish now. And people who bought the fish wanted it again. So this was a very, very interesting experience to me. I never thought this kind of thing could happen, but it just happened.
Isn't it interesting? Because it's almost like you needed that experience on eBay to understand, you know, what was in demand, right? Like your senses were heightened to what was going to sell, where you could make some money, where there's a margin and where there's a demand. And then all of a sudden you were presented with this other situation where you're like, okay, I'm missing all these ingredients to make my favorite dish. Where can I get them? And you're seeing in real time a great example of a need, right? A need in the marketplace. And where did you go from there?
So the most intriguing part of this whole experience is that it's very different from the traditional e-commerce I knew about. If you think about traditional e-commerce experience, it's a search-based experience. You first know what you want. Then you go to a super credible website like Amazon or eBay or Walmart. Then you search, you buy, right?
Right.
if you think about the experience I described to you, most people ended up buying the fish, did not even know the fish existed. And they bought the fish not because there was a very credible, sophisticated website. They bought the fish because they trusted the taste of that single person in our local community.
Yes.
And they trusted her, they trusted the fish. And then what they got eventually confirmed that it's better. It's better than anything they could find elsewhere. So that's the intriguing part, is the social aspects of this experience. It's a completely recommendation-based model rather than a search-based model. So that was an aha moment for me, because I wanted to create an e-commerce startup. However, I didn't think I could just adopt a model that is already perfected by Amazon or eBay, right? So if we create something, it has to be a very novel, new model. And that was my aha moment after observing this. And it's not an isolated case either, right? So I saw this happening in many, many WeChat groups across the US, right, in many different cities. So I thought, oh, there seems to be an opportunity here to create a platform that helps people who organize such group buys to have an easier job, because it's very painful to organize group buys if you are an organizer.
Right.
many pain points, right? You have to try to find suppliers. How do you even make money, right? Most organizers at the beginning couldn't make money because you just help, you know, neighbors to come together, right? So we wanted to find a way so the organizers can actually make some money. And from customer perspective, they can just easily pay online instead of, you know, paying cash to the vendor, you know, on the point of sales, right? So we followed this intuition and we started this company, We, to make the group buys better. That's our initial idea.
Talk to me about the psychology. Didn't it seem daunting? I mean, it wasn't that you were just trying to locate a few products. You were creating an online grocery store that spanned, you know, multi-ethnicities, right? So you were meeting the needs not only of your own Asian community, but also expanded to the Hispanic market and all of the unique foods. How did you get over those initial pain points to kind of get going? Like, what were the biggest pain points as you began, and how did you overcome them?
So focusing on multiple ethnicities came way later, years later.
Okay.
So in the very beginning, we weren't focusing on anyone else. We actually were just focusing on the Chinese immigrants. Mm-hmm. These are folks that actually primarily speak Mandarin. So mm-hmm. that's our initial idea. And we didn't raise any money in the beginning either, because we know that, you know, our background was not strong enough to raise capital. So we actually use our own money to get it started. And, you know, after we gained some traction, then we started to raise some capital. So in the first couple of years, we were able to raise $9 million.
Wow.
Which is a lot of money. But after we raised the money, 1 year later, we realized our initial model was not even the right model. We hit a wall in about 2017. But the reason was that this group buy experience I described to you was actually very difficult for most people to adopt. Imagine you have to go drive to your neighbor's garage to buy something. And usually the things you buy are not enough for you to make a dish. You still need some ingredients. For example, you still need green onion, you need mm-hmm. tofu, you need bok choy, you need soy sauce. All these things were not part of those group buys. So you still had to drive to, you know, 30, 40 minutes or an hour to an Asian supermarket to buy those ingredients. So at the end of the day, this group buy experience only gave people access to some extremely hard to find exciting products, but it didn't mm-hmm. really solve the more fundamental problem, which is the ethnic communities, people from those communities didn't have easy, affordable access to the food they love. So that's the more fundamental problem we couldn't solve with this group buy model.
And you know, when you think about competition from whether it's Amazon or like your local Whole Foods store, are you saying there were ingredients beyond that that just were not, cannot be found, and you were the only place that they could find them?
So usually there are two kind of stores, brick and mortar stores or online stores for the ethnic communities, right? One is what we call the mainstream stores. So these are the Whole Foods or Amazon Fresh or Safeway. Usually they don't carry even some basic ingredients that the Asian communities would love. For example, pork belly, right? When you buy pork from these mainstream stores, they don't sell pork belly. They thought there's fat on the pork belly and who would want to eat fat? But pork belly is such a fundamental ingredient for many, many Asian ethnicities, right? Japanese, Korean, Chinese, Vietnamese all eat pork belly, but you just couldn't walk into any mainstream store to buy pork belly. And then there are ethnic grocery stores to fill the void. So these stores, because they serve they use the brick and mortar store model to serve the ethnic communities, and the population for each of the ethnicity is not very high. So the store density cannot be high either, right? For example, the largest Asian grocery store chain is more than 40 years old and has less than 100 stores across the nation.
Wow.
But if we talk about Safeway, right? Safeway has more than 400 stores in the state of California alone.
Right.
That's why it's super easy to find a Safeway. You know, the closest Safeway to my house is a minute away, but the closest Chinese supermarket or Asian supermarket to my house is 25 to 30 minutes away. And I'm talking about the San Francisco Bay Area, where Asian population is 38%.
Right.
38% of the population is Asian, and the closest Asian supermarket to my house is still like 20, 25 minutes away.
We'll have more on this conversation in just a minute. But first, thank you to our sponsors.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
To Dine For, the podcast, is brought to you by American National, offering a broad suite of insurance solutions to protect what matters most to you. There's a funny thing about most insurance commercials, whether they feature lizards or birds or funny cartoon characters. It seems like they want you to think about anything but insurance. American National, on the other hand, has real local agents who get to know you, so they can help you reach better decisions about your insurance to make sure you're protecting what matters most to you. American National agents are part of your community. They're your neighbors. So whether it's solutions for your home, your small business, your farm, or your life, you can count on your local American National agent to make sure you get the discounts you deserve and the protection you need without paying for extras you don't. With American National, you get an ally, not just a web page. For a description of the American National companies, the products they write, in the states in which they're licensed, visit americannational.com/dine. Now back to our conversation.
Isn't it interesting? You started out, with a really good, solid business venture. How has it evolved for you philosophically when you think about connecting people with the food and the tastes and the memories of their homeland, of their childhood? Food is such a representation of culture and who we are. And I'm sure through this, you have experienced sort of a profound understanding of that. I'd love for you to kind of hear some of the anecdotes of people who have used WE and what it's meant to them.
Yeah, so I think food stays with people, right? Your taste. For example, I grew up in China, although I came to the US more than 20 years ago, but my childhood memory stays with me, right? The taste I'm familiar with. When I have a hard day, I want to eat the food that I ate as a child rather than pizza or burger. You know, I love both, but I just don't see them as the food that would give me a lot of comfort. So how we see food here at WE is really this. We see food as we call it a mirror and a window. So it's a mirror to reflect who you are, your culture, your upbringing. And it's a window for you to see through it to understand another culture. So we believe food is more than just the source of energy. We believe food brings people together. And we believe that everyone should have easy, affordable access to the food they love.
Mm-hmm.
As advanced as America is, that's still not the case. A lot of people cannot have easy, affordable access to the food they love. They have to resort to this, you know, common denominator food that everyone is acceptable for everyone. And after we created WE for some time, we realized, oh, that's actually should be the mission of the business. That's why we created this mission statement called, which is, you know, we challenge the world to taste life to the fullest.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we believe in. And that's what we want to make a reality.
I love that. What you just said, that's really, really cool. I'm wondering, you know, you didn't set out to be an entrepreneur. You fell into it in a way, you were inspired by it, and you kind of followed the breadcrumbs of opportunity, achieving the American dream of what you've done, which is really much to your credit and congratulations. I'm just wondering, like, along the way, who did you look to as mentors and who inspired you? Like, we all can't get there alone, right? So, but here you are and you've come from China, you're in America. Who helped you?
Looking back, I felt like there are so many unlikely events happened. I couldn't help but to feel that, you know, we were able to get where we are. It's almost like history picked us to solve this problem rather than, oh, we are just, you know, really, really good at solving all these problems. So there's this sense of, you know, fate or destiny
for
sure in this journey. I was very lucky. I got a lot of, you know, mentors to help me. For example, my very first check was from one of the co-founders of Hotmail. So his wife was using WE for those group buys, one of the customers. So I was introduced to him and he just loved what we were doing. And he wrote me my very first check. I think without that check, I probably would have very, very difficult time to raise our seed funding. And then later on, I also have a lot of mentors who just gave me a lot of help. I like to read books. So I felt like learning from the best through books is a very, very good way to get better. I'm a huge fan of Sam Walton. So I read his autobiography, Made in America, many, many times. And every few months, after I reread it, I would pick up different things. I would learn something new. I'm a huge fan of Joe Klong, the founder of Trader Joe's, right? I really love the book, Becoming Trader Joe. I'm a big fan of Home Depot. I'm a big fan of IKEA, 7-Eleven. Yeah, I think I learned a lot also from these giants in the history of retail.
And isn't it interesting, like, you don't have to reinvent the wheel. Other people have walked your journey. Sure, it's different, right? You know, you're doing specialty Asian food for Asian folks initially. It's expanded since then. But I mean, as a business model, it isn't that much different than Sam Walton, right? You're trying to find value. You're trying to create this business. You're trying to create something from nothing. Like these stories really are transferable. And it's wonderful that you can lean on other people. Talk to me about raising money, because there's I interview so many founders about some of the
tips and tricks they use to raise money, to get in the room, and to have to get that rejection and to continue on. And I always like to leave the listener with a better understanding of raising money, because really it's about telling a story and selling someone on your idea. If you had any tip to offer, what did you learn from the process? And is there anything you can share?
Raising money was extremely difficult for me. So things became easier after COVID and after we scaled to a much larger scale. But the first few rounds was extremely difficult. Maybe a couple of things I can share. One is you only need to get one yes.
Mm.
Right. I think that's from from Reid Hoffman. I think he shared at one of those times. You only need one yes. So the 100 rejections really didn't matter. Mm. What matters is to get to that one yes. Another thing is actually shared with me by Jack. I didn't know who to reach out to, right? So I asked Jack Smith, I said, hey, can you introduce me to other investors? Because I Googled, it said, oh, you need a warm introduction. Mm-hmm. And then he said, don't just listen to Google. Those advices are for people who don't have enough conviction to win. So try cold email, try cold call. That's what I did. I tried cold email, I tried cold call. A few rounds of my investment actually materialized through those. I just tried. And sometimes the very first person you cold called or cold emailed didn't actually invest. In my case, none of the cold emails, the investors I cold emailed invested. However, they introduced me to other venture capitalists.
Mm.
For example, my Series A investor was introduced by one of those cold emails I reached out to. And then he ended up investing in Wee. So those are the couple of things maybe I can share with other entrepreneurs.
Yes. And I know there's such a bias because, you know, women who are up against, you're going into the rooms, they get like 2% of all the funding. Same with African-American, I imagine Asian. There's a bias there. And I'm just, you know, it's always, I'm particularly interested in hearing from voices, underrepresented voices, and how they did it, because you're up against more. It's more difficult. But the statistics are there. So I feel like your perspective is even more valuable. You know, it's always when you can offer wisdom, it's even greater.
I think representation matters. I remember every time I met with someone who didn't know what is HMart. HMart is one of the largest Asian supermarket chain, right? If I met someone who had never heard of HMart, my chance was probably like zero. because that person probably couldn't relate to how difficult it is for Asian Americans to find the food they love, right? The reason I said representation matters is because during the years I was fundraising, I felt like more and more Asian professionals, they became venture capitalists. So I actually met a lot of Asian investors who had that similar experience as I had, right? So they were able to relate. I think I was lucky that there was this trend that more and more Asians actually joined the venture capital industry during those years.
It makes such a difference, you know, when they see the need and they've experienced it, or their grandmother's experienced it, right? Or their mother's experienced it. They get it instantly, right? It's almost like telling people if they're trying to make pizza and there's no fresh basil, what would you do, right? Like that everyone can understand here, right? It's like, how do you translate that? It's all about storytelling, right? And really kind of captivating people with the story. What is your vision for Wee? Where are you right now? And what is your why?
I did some research about the history of demographic change in the US, right? So that's when I discovered that the reason Wee existed is because this legislation passed in 1965. It's called the Immigration Act of 1965. It was signed into law by the Johnson administration. And that law leveled the playing field of immigrants from all different countries. Before 1965, only immigrants from European countries can easily come to the US. But after 1965, every country has the same quota. The same number of immigrants can immigrate to the US every year. So that actually triggered this whole demographic shift in this country. So since then, America is becoming more and more diverse. And we actually is serving the needs of the more diverse population here in the US, right? That's why our mission is to provide easy, affordable access of food to the underserved communities. We will continue to do that. We are only at the very beginning of our journey. The number of ethnicities we're serving is still small. Even for those people in those ethnicities, we still have a long way to go to really provide the selection and the value. So yeah, we are very excited about this because this is a once a century mega trend. I always believe that a business is not created in a vacuum. It has to be created to serve a huge change in society. That's how an iconic brand is born. So I believe that's our answer to this huge shift in the US. We want to become the first choice destination for all those underserved communities in the US.
Larry, how have you personally changed through this whole process, through this whole journey of creating this? You know, you started out with an idea. I'm sure it's been more work than you can ever imagine, harder than you ever imagined. But I'm just wondering, how are you a different person now than you were when you started it?
I'll tell you a semiconductor jargon. So in semiconductor, imagine how do you test the reliability of a chip? It's hard to know that the chip will last for 10 years. So how you do it is actually put the chip into what we call this, it's called a burn-in oven. So you put extremely high voltage, high current, and high temperature. So you can simulate 20 years of aging in this burning oven in like days, right? So I feel like that's what it's like to be an entrepreneur. You are put into this burning oven. It kind of accelerated your learning because you are dealing with so many different problems. So I would say in the last few years, definitely the learning got accelerated. So if I hadn't started the business, probably I would eventually learn those things, but it would take a lot longer. Business is really pushing you to get better every single day. And as the CEO, you are the ceiling. One of my investors always said, "Hey, Larry, you are the ceiling of your business. Mm-hmm. You have to continue expanding your understanding, your horizon, so you won't be the bottleneck for the business." I believe that. So that's why I felt like I learned tremendously. I became a very different person, I think, after I started We. That's how I feel.
And how do you handle burnout, right? Because the amount of effort and energy that it's taken to get to this point takes a toll. How have you tried to create balance, or is that impossible?
I do think it's possible. I think in the very beginning, I didn't have the right expectation. I read a lot of startup fairy tales, right? You just started something and then, you know, 2-3 years later, it's a multi-billion-dollar business, happily ever after, right? But a few years into it, I realized that's not going to be the case. I think startup is more like a marathon than a sprint. That's when I started to kind of change running a startup as into a lifestyle. Mm-hmm. So I shifted my perspective. Okay, this is not going to be, oh, I just worked really hard for a few years and then I'll just do something else. I changed my perspective to this is who I am. This is what I do. This is how I live my life, right? So once you change your perspective, you actually will live a more balanced life, right? So for example, I never cooked before. Now I started cooking. I started to enjoy cooking. I never thought I would really, you know, I'm selling food, but I didn't think I would enjoy cooking. But now I got a lot of satisfaction from cooking. Every time I cook something, you know, the kids loved it. They just ate it all. That kind of satisfaction is amazing. And I didn't thought I would have that kind of moment. So yeah, I think it's possible. You just have to find the right balance to find ways how to de-pressure, how to appreciate just small things. So you don't have to like think about the business all day long.
I saw that you at one point taught your professor and you've been a teacher. So you're able to think in terms of how is this going to translate to a student. So I'm going to ask you, what advice would you give to yourself, the younger Larry, that you think other people who are just starting out and starting a company could really use?
I think the hardest thing for a person is not to get advice. It's what you do with the millions of advices people give you.
Mm.
So I think my younger self, if I had told him something, he probably wouldn't listen. I think you only probably saint can learn from listening to wisdoms. I think you almost have to like experience it, do
live it.
Live it, exactly. That's why I like to reread books, because the book hasn't changed, but I changed.
Yes.
That's why every time I read the book, I pick up different things.
Right.
I could never picked up when I was younger or with less experience, right? So having said that, I would say I want my kids to understand is trust the process of life. Trust that you find things you are interested in and you are passionate about, just do it. Don't think too much about, oh, what I would lose, or don't calculate too much.
Mm.
Instead, just trust the process of life. Similar to what Steve Jobs said during the Stanford commencement speech, that the dots will be connected later. But as you live it, you probably couldn't understand why you do this or that, but just follow your instinct and trust that dots will be connected.
That's awesome. Larry, I've enjoyed this conversation so much. I wish you continued success for We, and I really appreciate your time.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening to Dine For, the podcast. For more information on the show, the guests, and the podcast, head to todineforTV.com. You can find us on Instagram at todineforTV and Facebook at todinefor with Kate Sullivan. Thanks to the sponsors of To Dine For, the podcast, American National Insurance. Special thank you to producer and sound editor John Golmer. To the loyal followers of this program, cheers, stay hungry, and stay inspired. I'll see you back at the table soon.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Summer's just around the corner, so give your body the care it deserves with Osea's best-selling Andaria Algae Body Oil. Created by infusing Andaria seaweed in barrels of botanical oils, it leaves skin silky soft and glowing. Plus, it's clinically proven to improve elasticity and deeply moisturize without feeling greasy. It's safe, clean, vegan skincare. Get 10% off your first order at OseaMalibu.com with code GLOW, plus free shipping on orders over $60.